This Human Capital podcast is brought to you by Goalspan, a performance management app that helps you set goals, get real-time feedback, run reviews, and align your workforce around what's most important. With Goalspan, you can integrate with all your favorite HR and payroll apps. To learn more, go to goalspan.com. Hey, listeners, I'm Jeff Hunt, CEO of Goalspan and host of This Human Capital podcast. Today, we're going to discuss the intersection of organizational culture and sales strategy. In highly competitive business landscapes, the value of a sales mentality cannot be overstated. A strong sales mindset emphasizing relationship building, customer focus, and strategic market growth is not just meant for sales teams, but it's incredibly valuable when applied across all levels of leadership. Some of the most successful CEOs do this exceptionally well. They know how to foster a culture of engagement and motivation among all internal and external stakeholders. This almost always includes prioritizing clear communication, leading with vision, and customer-centric strategies that provide a steady flow of healthy revenue streams, positioning their companies for long-term success and market leadership. With this understanding of the transformative impact of sales leadership, it's my pleasure to introduce a speaker who embodies the essence of this philosophy. Alice Hyman is one of the most competent sales leaders and consultants I know. She is internationally known for her expertise in elevating sales to increase valuation for companies primarily in the B2B space. Alice works with CEOs and company leaders to build the strategies that find new business and grow existing accounts. Her clients love her spirit and the way she energizes their sales organizations. She's the host of a popular podcast, Sales Talk for CEOs, and she dedicates time to local entrepreneurs by teaching at the University of Nevada in the entrepreneurship minor, which she helped inspire. Alice also serves on the board of several growing companies to energize and elevate their sales. When she's not guiding CEOs, she can be found hanging out with her family, walking, snow skiing, sailing, and volunteering in her community. Welcome, Alice.
Thank you so much. What a great introduction.
I'm excited about our conversation because we haven't actually spent much time on the show talking about sales. So, you know, one of the things I mentioned in my intro that we're going to get to is sales is really everybody's job. And sometimes we like to put it over there as a department in the organization that's separate from everyone else. But isn't that the truth?
It is really true. People tell me, oh, no, I'm not in sales. But the thing is that we're all in customer, right? So if you don't have any customers, your business isn't going to go anywhere and we can't employ people. So when we say sales, really what we mean is we're all about the customer, because without the customer, we don't exist.
Alice, when you're called in to an organization, maybe they have some lackluster sales growth or they've got some real issues. What are you often seeing? What are some of the common problems when you come in that lead to lackluster sales growth?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes a CEO will call me in when they've got pretty steady growth, but they want something more, right? So they're either thinking of an exit. So, you know, they want to get to a certain point where their company will be more valuable, right? Or they want to do some acquisitions themselves to kind of make their company bigger and more valuable. Or they want to take on some kind of debt or equity. And so those are things that trigger them. Sometimes it's also things like, I've been through 3 VPs of sales. It must be me. You know, not yeah. them, right? Or in one case, it was 6 VPs of sales before
wow.
I went to them. And I was like, wow, okay, like that is definitely not, that is definitely you, not them. Everybody, every VP can't be that bad. So there's usually something that they want to change. And they're struggling to figure out how to change it. And their own team is unable to make the changes that are needed. So then I come in. And the first thing that I really want to do is understand what's in the CEO's head, right? Especially if they're the founder and they're going to want to exit at some point. I want to know, what is your exit strategy? What is your timeline for exit? What things do you want to accomplish before you exit? Who are you going to be after you exit? What is this going to look like, right? And I try to get that out of their head so that I understand where they're going. Because if they're saying, oh, no, I'm not going to exit for 10 years or more. Here's what I want to build. I'm going to get some equity or some kind of financing. I'm going to build it differently then. I'd like to exit in 3 years. And here's who I think was going to buy me. That's another thing I always ask. Well, who do you think is going to acquire you? Is it private equity? Is it another company like yours? Is it another company who is would be symbiotic with yours? What does that look like? So once I understand what's in their head, then I can take a look at, okay, so where are we today and how did we get here? I don't need to know like the painful history totally. I just need to know like, how did you get here? Did you do all the sales yourself for 20 years? Or have you been through lots of salespeople? Or have you got the same salespeople? What about the rest of the team? How did you get here? And then I take a look at where they want to go and I help them set the strategy to do that. Now that includes everything, the people, the process, the product, the whole go-to-market strategy. Sometimes it's that I can't get them where they want to be with the people that they currently have. So that's going to take time. You have to do it delicately. You want to make graceful exits for everyone who's got to go, or you got to train them up if they're going to stay, right? So you got to get that kind of in place. And then always revenue is an issue, right? So once we look and see, well, what is there and what's going to need to change, then I go immediately to, where are we going to get the money to do all this changing? Are you already profitable, or do we need to get sales ramped up first before we can make any other changes? Now, typically, I go to the fastest, easiest way to get more sales. So what is the fastest, easiest way to get more sales? Well, if you're years in and have lots of customers, the fastest, easiest way is to get more business from your existing customers. Now, this does not apply to a startup, but I don't usually work with startups. Sometimes I mentor them, but my practice is with mature companies. So they always have customers that are buying something. And then we do what we call a white space analysis. And we take a look over, what are these customers buying now? And what are the gaps? What are they not buying that they could be that would really help them, right? We're not trying to sell people things they don't need, but we're looking, wow, they don't use this service. And I think that would be super helpful to them. So we want to go back to our existing customers, shore them up, make sure they're supremely happy, they're delighted, they love what they're purchasing and they use it well. And, you know, they're successful using what you've sold them. And then secure that and see if there's more that you can sell of the same, or can you sell them some of the other products and services that you use? And that usually picks up sales pretty quickly. You can get a pretty good lift off of that right away. Then as you're doing that, right, and you find customers that are delighted and are successful using what you've sold them, if you do it well, you can get introductions from them to others who are similar to them, others that they know. And that's a faster way to get sales than obviously cold outreach or anything else that you could do. So those are the two things that I say. Let's do this first. Let's go back to your existing customers. And then while we're there, if they're delighted, let's get them to refer some people, you know, and make some introductions for us. So that gets a little more money rolling in the door, right? Then we buy ourselves a little time so that we can start doing things that take longer, like cold outreach, like build a good list of ideal customers and go after them with cold outreach. Well, that's wonderful, but that takes a long time. So we might want to get that outbound machine going. Meanwhile, we also may want to get an inbound machine going and figure out some ways to use the internet and social media and all those things to bring some things to the door, right? Have people filling out web forms, attending events, calling to talk to someone. So we have that combination of inbound and outbound going. And then it's also tied into getting them to do things like trade shows or events. And I'm really big on companies holding their own events and inviting exactly who they want to be there versus spending a lot of money going to an event where they might get a small little population of people that they want. So I'm trying to bring new ideas to them on how to increase their revenue. And then, of course, their team is deploying it, and I'm helping make sure that everything gets deployed.
Mm-hmm. And in the ideal world, how long will this cycle take that you just took? Because I imagine there's a lot of variability depending upon what's going on.
Yeah, I think anytime a CEO is setting out to make changes, they need to look over 12 to 18 months to start to see anything really happen. Things just don't happen that quickly in sales necessarily. Occasionally, you can get some things popping fairly quickly, but it does take time because you're changing process. You're teaching humans new behavior or replacing humans, right? And that takes time and it takes care. Like, I don't want anybody just go, okay, we're going to fire all these people and hire new people. That's not the way it works. The people who are there now have a lot of value and a lot of knowledge. So we don't want to just let them all go if they can't do the things we need. We first want to try to train them to do the things we need or move them to different seats so they can be successful, right? So as a CEO, we always want to try to do that first. And as we're changing process, we have to recognize that our people and our culture is this right now. And we're asking them to be this. That's going to take some time. I believe that patience is needed. And that's always hard, especially for founders, because they want everything to happen more quickly. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And if they have any investors, they definitely want it to happen more quickly, right? Even if they're a more mature company, investors want you to move quickly. But it does take time and it does take some patience and you have to stick to it. So the worst thing that can happen, and I've seen it many times, is we get it all set up and it's running finally for 2 to 3 months and they're like, we're not getting results. And they panic. And I'm like, yeah, 2 to 3 months isn't enough time to get the results yet. We need to persist past this. And even though you tell them in the beginning, don't expect anything for 6 months, but they're spending money and time and they want to see some results. So they give up on the changes, the positive changes too soon, and they lose their momentum and they fall back on what they were doing, which wasn't working either. And they didn't give the new processes and the new training and the new people enough time to actually get the results that are needed. So that's the danger in it, right? You've got to have some patience.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Now, in some of the work that we do with our clients, we will occasionally see breakdowns between sales and operations. And so operations is complaining that sales has oversold. Sales is complaining that operations is not delivering.
Right.
What do you do in this situation when you encounter that? Is it usually a communication breakdown? Is it we need to go back to the beginning and really determine what sort of value we're delivering? Are we capable of delivering that type of value? Talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, this is not a new problem, right? Forever, the ops people, you know, tell sales people, don't sell that. We don't have it. Or, you know, slow down. Now, I never want to hear salespeople being told to slow down, right? That's crazy. So again, this is back to the CEO. The CEO has built a culture in these situations that are siloed. When you have siloed culture, you are going to have these kinds of problems. We are a team. Selling is a team sport. It's all about the customer. So everybody in the organization has to know who is the customer. They have to understand the customer. They have to know what we're selling to them and know what we're delivering to them. And then everyone in the organization has to understand what it looks like for a customer to be successful using what you sold them. What does that look like? So it's not enough to just deliver it. That's not enough. They have to become successful using it for your company to thrive. Because when they're successful using it, they'll continue using it, they'll buy more, and they'll shout out to others how great it is. So that's really the only thing we should all be going for. Our goal for every human working in our company should be that we have customers who are successful using what we sold them. Now, if operations had that point of view, things would be different. So sales and ops need to have a little get together in a little kumbaya and understand, right? So they have to spend time together and know each other and understand what's happening. And they need to communicate regularly. So someone from the sales team, the leader or someone designated, needs to be consistently communicating with ops and vice versa, right? If there is a situation where we really shouldn't be selling more because customers are going to be disappointed, then that has to get up to the CEO level. What do you want to do about this? Because that's not something sales can solve, and it's not something operations can solve. And it will just create contention, because who's going to solve that? The CEO has to get involved, right? And their role here is, what is the strategy, right? So what is the strategy? Is the strategy to pause on selling? Is the strategy to improve operations? Is it to acquire a company who can do the operations so that the sellers can continue selling? It comes back to the CEO and the senior team to make some serious decisions. They should not leave operations and sales to fight it out. That is not the right way to go about it.
Yeah, I'm reflecting on Patrick Lencioni, who wrote The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. I interviewed him at one point on this podcast, but he has this whole concept of Team One, which speaks to exactly what you're referring to, Alice, which is when we're coming into the executive team meeting, that is Team One, and we're taking off our functional hat of sales, of ops, of everything else. We're putting on our strategic hat of being in Team One. That's looking at things collectively together, looking at breakdowns, because if I'm a senior sales leader and there are breakdowns in ops, that's actually my responsibility as well as the ops side, and vice versa. If ops is struggling or we are not getting the revenue, it might be because of problems in our customer service area. And that's all we all need to be evaluating and determining what we're going to do to approach. So just wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I agree with you. So the senior team should always put the department they lead second and the company first when they're in that role, right? That leadership team has to make decisions that are best for the company. And that's hard to do, right? Because everyone's to protect their own turf. They want to protect their own people. They want to protect their own department. So it's a skill that everybody needs to learn. How do we take that hat off and come into this group and talk about what's best for the company? And then figure out how to make that happen and go back to our teams and say, here's what we're going to make happen. Mm-hmm. It's critically important to have a leadership team that can do that. And I think that one of the problems is most CEOs simply do not have that kind of leadership team.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I'm wondering about the relationship, because this is another thing that we hear about a lot. Who owns the customer relationship? Does the sales rep own that relationship? Does the company own that relationship? Is the brand equity so high that the relationship is really more with the product and the services that are delivered? And I'm wondering how that comes into play. And I'll just add a footnote. Like in my business, in the performance management space with Goalspan, we have sort of a combination of where that relationship is owned. And some of it is supported by being in multiple marketplaces of integrated partners. So we happen to be out there integrated with about 35 different HR providers in the performance management space, in the HR space. And so people find us through that and they'll become customers through that. And we will deliver a product that has high value. And so there's a little bit lesser of a need for a high touch type of relationship. Whereas in other organizations, the relationship between the actual salesperson and the customer is extremely valuable. So how do you flesh all of that out in looking at the work that you do?
Well, you know, I first want to look at the customer and see, what do they need to be served well? What do they want? How do they want to be served? I think that's important. But I believe every customer deserves to have more than one touch point in an organization. Now, this is very dependent. I'm not talking about a retail sale. I'm not talking about a more simple business-to-business sale. I work in the world of the complex sale, right? So in a business-to-business complex sale, most of your customers will have enough value to you that they should have multiple touch points. So depending on how much value that customer has to your company, you will want to increase the number of touch points. So your top 20 customers should know the salesperson. They should know somebody in product. They should know somebody in engineering if that's needed for that. They should know a senior executive. There should be a senior executive that is a sponsor for that. and they should have access to your CEO, right? At the highest level, their CEO or their general manager, the right person should be introduced to the CEO and have that access. So at the highest level with the customers that have the most value to you, you will want to make sure there are multiple touch points throughout your organization and theirs, matching people up, remembering that people don't stay in organizations very long anymore. So if you only have one contact and that contact leaves, you're in pretty big trouble. And I see it happen every single day. It's disastrous. So you never want to leave it that just the salesperson has the relationship. So again, I would rank and rate my customers and determine how many touch points they should have based on the value that they currently have to my company or the value that they could have in the future with growth, and make sure that there are enough touch points and that people are connected at like levels, and the people who need to be connected with engineers or product specialists are, and the people who need to be connected with the customer success are, the people who need your senior executives are connected to your senior executives. So I believe in multiple touch points. And in the customer base that is not as valuable to you for whatever reason, it's just maybe not spending as much money or able to spend as much or able to do as much with your products and services and go as deep into that product line, you still want to support them, and you never want to have only your salesperson as a touch point, because salespeople's average tenure at a company is pretty short. I mean, we know that for lower level sales development reps, business development reps, AEs, it's something around 18 to 22 months. And then as people age and become more senior in sales, they do stay around a little longer, but I don't know what the averages are, but I'm seeing it to be maybe 3 to 5 years. So if you have customers for life, which is what we all want, over time, they're going to have new people, right, interfacing with them. So it's best to have a multitude of people, and at least maybe an account executive, the account manager, a customer success person, and someone in a department that is not directly sales, right, who has some connections, so that if somebody leaves in either organization, you are still well connected. And the new people who come into your customer organizations are not going to immediately go try to find a new solution, right? So I recommend many touch points, and marketing certainly can be one of them, because marketing can address in a one-to-many way many of the questions and needs and product updates and things that can just be going out, right, to your customers seamlessly, and they feel like they're being touched, right? So marketing can certainly help with that. But yeah, we do need organizations to be multi-threaded into their customers for sure.
And it sounds like the multiple touch points is extremely helpful. And I'm wondering if taking it to the next level and understanding how much the customer values each of those touch points is also helpful. Because if I know that the customer places a 90% relational value on the connection with the senior sales representative versus some other form, then I may want to address that, because that could be a risk for the organization versus if I have it more diversified.
It is a big risk, because salespeople tend to go rogue sometimes. And so we want to be careful, right? We need more than one line in. So if they're saying, oh no, I only want to talk to my rep, well, this is a problem, because they call in and they're calling the rep for things that they shouldn't be calling the rep for. We need our sales reps to sell. Yes. And if they're handling customer problems, things that engineering should be dealing with, or things that another department should be dealing with, they're being pulled away from their selling time. But if we have an organization such that when a customer calls in, no one else will return their call except the sales rep, we've created this problem for ourselves. And I've seen it many times. Customer success, customer support just won't get back to people in a timely manner. So what do? They go call the original sales rep that sold them the deal and say, hey, nobody at your company is getting back to me. And while sales reps don't want to lose a customer, they're going to do whatever it takes. And it's definitely going to pull them away from selling. So this is the sales leadership's job to make sure this isn't happening. And so that with the CEO have to say, look, here's the kind of problems that our sales reps are encountering every day from customers. you need to set something up for another department to handle these because they're not sales related and they're not revenue generating, but they are retention issues if we don't solve them. And so it's important. But I think a lot of times, I don't know what it is, but boy, CEOs and leaders somehow think that salespeople can work miracles and they can work 70 hours a week and they can do all their sales and handle all these customer complaints. And they really can't. And we're burning them out.
It's asking too much.
It is.
Yeah, exactly.
But a salesperson is never going to let their customer just dangle. They won't do it. It doesn't matter how many times you tell them. If their customer isn't getting a response, they're going to act.
Absolutely. Now, when you reflect on your most successful engagements with clients over the years, what are the 3, 4, 5 things that you've seen that have been common among those successes?
I think that CEOs who are open-minded, agile, and flexible, right? Who understand that change will have to occur for them to get what they want. And not that they can't push back, because I think that's good to have healthy dialogue around everything that you're going to be making changes around, but they have to understand that what they're doing now isn't working for a reason.
Yeah.
And many times it's just because it worked 20 years ago. It doesn't work anymore. It just doesn't work that way anymore, right? Or it even worked 5 years ago before COVID. It doesn't work anymore. So they have to understand that what they're doing doesn't work. And they have to be of the mindset that they have to change first and be the model if they want everyone else. So they have to model the way, right? They have to believe. They have to voice that belief. They have to voice that vision. And they have to help everyone understand why these changes are going to make their company thrive. And if they don't do that and they just impose the changes, it doesn't work.
Love that. As we get ready to wrap up, are you ready for some lightning round questions?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
All right. First one is, what are you most grateful for?
Oh, gosh, my family. I mean, truly, truly, I have the most amazing family and I love them all dearly. And we're all very close and they are my best friends. And I am just so deeply grateful for them.
What's the most difficult leadership lesson that you've learned over your career?
Oh, gosh, so many. I think that what I've learned to do is to help people change without pushing so much. I think in my youth, I was very much like, you're just going to do this and it's going to work. You know, like push the solution, push my beliefs, push what I wanted to change, knowing in my mind that it was best for them, right? And I think that the lesson is, people can have the capacity to change, but they have to do it in their own way and in their own time. And that my job is to guide that, not to inflict it right on anyone. And so I've had to learn how to temper things, temper my ideas, and learn how to communicate in a way that helps them learn and grow and come into the change on their own in a way that makes it possible for it to really happen.
That sounds like wisdom to me right there. Who is one person you would interview if you could, living or not?
I've always been a huge fan of Rachel Carson. I don't know if anybody remembers her. I'm pretty old. She wrote a book called Silent Spring. I've read a lot of her works and I just found her fascinating. She was a woman speaking up when women didn't. She was a woman who was trying to change the way that we grow our food in our country and change the way we were polluting our earth and a lot of things way back when it wasn't really popular or when women didn't really speak up much. And so she's someone that I've just always admired and I would have loved to have been able to meet her and interview her.
Do you have a top book recommendation?
Oh, I have so many book recommendations. As you can see behind me, that isn't even all of my books. Mm-hmm. I think books that I always recommend to my students is to read How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think that that is a good book for everyone. It doesn't matter what career they're going into. Dale Carnegie had a lot of wisdom. And that book, as old as it is, still speaks very well to what it takes to win friends and influence people. So I think that I would recommend that. But I mean, there's just so many good ones. I don't even know where to begin.
That's a timeless one for sure. So yeah. I like that. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Let's see. Advice I've received. I guess probably the best advice I've ever received is to rest. And I was not a person for most of my life that would rest or thought anything good of rest, even though I was an athlete and athletes need to recover, right? But I guess I thought of it a little bit different. I was always on the go, going, doing, right? And I think the problem is that when we do that, we don't give ourselves time to reflect. And reflection is the key to really making wise decisions to move yourself and your team forward. So I think that is really good advice for everyone. Rest is imperative. It's not something you do if you can. You must do it. You must rest. You must give your brain a rest. You must give your body a rest. And you must have that resting time so that you can reflect. And with that reflection comes the big growth and the big ideas and the creativity that we all need to be our best.
Such a great idea. And it's so countercultural here in the United States to do that. But yeah, that is just a great piece of advice. Before we wrap up, Alice, you have your podcast. Say a little bit about that and also how people can find you.
Yeah, my podcast is Sales Talk for CEOs. And I'm going to give my good friend Park Howell a shout out for helping me name my podcast years ago when I started it, because we were coming up with all those things. And he's like, how about calling it what it is? And I was like, great, need to, yeah, Park. So we did. We called it Sales Talk for CEOs. And what I do is I interview CEOs who are at least 5 years in and around 5 or more million in revenues. And they've built a sales organization. And I want to hear their story of founding their company and how they grew their sales, how they started maybe doing the selling and then how they worked it into a sales organization and how that sales organization grew to where it is today. And then kind of what's next. And I also interview experts who can talk to CEOs about things that they need to know. You know, I'm always saying what CEOs need to know about sales or about marketing or about whatever, right? So that they can be their best and they can help lead their team to thrive, right? Because that's what we all really want. That's what I do on my podcast. I'd love for everybody to tune in on salestalkforceos.com or any station that you listen to podcasts on. I'm there. And then to reach me, it's aliceheinman.com, or please reach out to me on LinkedIn. But the only rule is you have to tell me that you heard me here on Jeff's show. That's how you know me. And then I'll accept your connection request.
I love that. Thanks for the little plug. So this has been such a great conversation. If you had to just distill it down to a few of the most important takeaways for our listeners, what would those be?
Well, I think that everyone listening needs to understand their role in sales. The CEO really is the chief sales officer and the chief customer officer and the chief runner of everything, right? And that's a lot of hats to wear. And I think we sometimes give our CEOs a little too much credit, right? And not in a bad way, but it, or maybe in a bad way, because we don't really understand the kind of help and support they need. So sales is a team sport. It involves everyone. And the CEO really has to be in charge of that strategy and making sure it all happens and making sure everyone has that idea and that culture that the customer is important and sales takes care of our customers. We all take care of our customers, right? So distilling it down is just, you have a role in sales. Figure out what that role is and support your CEO with your knowledge and your wisdom and your ideas so that they can take those in and put those over the whole organization to make it better for everyone. Don't think your CEO knows everything. Don't think that your CEO doesn't want your ideas. They do. They need your help and your support to help the customer to be successful using what you've sold them and to thrive. So when your customers are thriving, you're going to thrive.
Alice, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and bringing so much wisdom for our listeners today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Human Capital. If you like this show, please tell your friends and also take the time to go rate and review us. Human Capital is a production of Goalspan, your integrated source for performance management. Now go out and be the inspiration to other humans. And thank you for being human, kind.